On December 13th, 2012, the Packet Pushers published Show 128, a video podcast with Big Switch Networks, where Dan Hersey and Andrew Harding discuss and demo the Big Switch controller and applications that run on the Big Switch controller, such as Big Virtual Switch and Big Tap. If you haven't seen that show yet, you might want to head on up to packetpushers.net and give Show 128 a view before listening to this podcast. What this podcast covers is the Q&A session after the formal recording of Show 128 was complete. There were quite a lot of questions from the live audience, and we talked through several of them. These questions and answers are excellent for helping a traditional network engineer better understand the Big Switch controller and how it fits into both current and future network designs. Speaking on the podcast are the usual Packet Pushers co-hosts, Ethan Banks, that's me, who's got a little bit of a cold today, and Greg Farrow, along with Dan Hersey and Andrew Harding from Big Switch. And for more info on Big Switch Networks, visit BigSwitch.com.
Okay, so now that we've done that bit for the people who'll be listening at home, Andrew, would you like to take some questions and answers from the audience?
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Well, there was one that kind of came up thematically throughout the long list of questions we got, which was just a kind of a fundamental architecture question, which is the Big Switch controller, how is it plumbed? Is it out of band? And then speak to the redundancy and high availability of that controller so that the controller is not a SPOF.
It is not a single point of failure in the network. The packet in event does go to the controller, and the forwarding cables do then need to be programmed. Thereafter, the switches handle the traffic, and any changes could come from the controller. But if a controller were to fail, and it's a modern software system, right? So if a controller were to fail, there's a backup, and we can operate in a clustered environment. Existing flows wouldn't be impacted during a failover, and we can fail over to a backup controller and pick up a new flow.
And in addition to that, and you know, this goes back to you know the progression of OpenFlow as a technology, particularly as you lead into you know new versions of the protocol like OpenFlow 1.2, where they have the concept of controller groups. You know, we certainly support the concept of multiple controllers and the switches connecting to multiple controllers at the same time. And so even if a given controller goes away, that switch knows about the other controllers in the infrastructure and already has an active connection, and one of the things that we're very excited about is that, you know, within our architecture, you can literally take one of the controllers out, and there isn't a single lost packet in the infrastructure, which is a very, very impressive thing to see.
Is there a separate control network, an out-of-band network?
The packet in event, I think, will usually go over a separate VLAN. So that initial event will usually go over a kind of a management network.
And you know that also speaks to the combination of you know OpenFlow and the existing hybrid switches in that you know there are a number of data centers that do have out of band management networks for their infrastructure, but you know as we all know some people do X and other people do Y. In this case, Y is sort of the concept of in band management, and when you have this hybrid infrastructure of OpenFlow support on traditional switches, you can run this in-band management channel without risking the OpenFlow portion of the infrastructure. So we fundamentally support both, and it really just comes down to you know what the customer needs and desires are.
Okay, so it's an either or. Got it. That was just a fundamental question I wanted to lead off with because it had come up several times in the list. Now, Andrew, you'd also answered several of the questions here, touched on them. Is there any of those questions that you'd picked up on you wanted to follow up with?
Yeah, you know, there were so many during the presentation that I'm now having to scroll back. It's very, very active, very, very active audience. So one was an ask about sort of disadvantages and advantages of going with physical and virtual switches. I think one thing we want to highlight is that historically there was kind of this notion of you had kind of an all or nothing approach as OpenFlow was developing and folks were figuring out how SDN might work. We can work in an overlay mode with you know, virtual switches as the OpenFlow elements and traditional switches in the network. We can work, of course, in a pure physical OpenFlow network, but the key thing is our hybrid network virtualization approach, which enables OpenFlow and non-OpenFlow switches to work together and can integrate physical appliances like a next-generation firewall or a server load balancer and get all of that done in one environment, not having to make the choice between just the virtual switches or the false choice, really, to on day one have an entire network of physical OpenFlow switches.
Some more fundamental questions. One was, what versions of OpenFlow does your controller support? And I guess what would the roadmap be for future OpenFlow versions?
Yeah, absolutely. So today we support OpenFlow 1.0 because you know most of the switches that are out there are OpenFlow 1.0 capable and compliant. You know, fundamentally our controller architecture is very modular and designed to just drop in new OpenFlow protocol versions as they become available. So as the switches become available to support the concept of you know 1.2 and 1.3, it's very easy for us to just simply add that capability to our controller platform. So more than likely, you know, moving into 2013, you'll see our controller support additional versions of the OpenFlow protocol.
You know, there was another set of questions around the Northbound API and what it means to program to big network controller and what REST means. I thought I'd just kind of try to summarize those. One was that the Northbound API, someone highlighted, there was no standard for that right now. And, you know, this is a case where it's early yet. Getting the Southbound interface standardized was you know, the first thing that needed to happen. We endeavor to maintain a consistent API between Floodlight and Big Network Controller. So there's a start at, you know, writing something on the open source controller and moving it to a commercial controller is a start. And then an important point is that our chief architect, Rob Sherwood, is working within the ONF and leading the work group where the Northbound API standardization work is being done. So I think great question. That REST API, someone had asked, you know, what is a REST API to a networking person that's, you know, it's more of a programming term. I think, you know, REST has emerged as kind of the HTTP of remote procedure calls. If we were to go back to, you know, CORBA and SOAP and all that, REST is kind of the way to get things done. And a great benefit of a REST API is that it enables folks to write applications in whatever language they choose. There was a question about, you know, what language can I use? Folks can write language in the application they choose, and a good example here is there's a nice security application that was recently shipped with version 0.9 of the Floodlight controller. So that's just trying to get that whole collection of questions in one shot there.
You know, to add to that, and I know this is sort of a scary topic for network administrators because fundamentally we're not programmers, at least most of us, right? When we talk about programmability, a lot of that programmability actually may be highly abstracted for the network admin. So as an example, you still have a CLI available to you, and we've worked very hard to make sure that our CLI is providing all of the function within our controller and applications for traditional network admins. The perfect example of this programmability is that our CLI is actually making REST API calls under the covers. While you have this you know, network-friendly CLI, fundamentally you can start to expose those functions in other ways, either through you know, custom programming that you want to do through whatever language you're comfortable with or scripting through our REST API, or even a higher level abstraction than that, you know, as an example within, you know, the OpenStack use case where you have this quantum API that has very, very basic calls like create network, add router to network, add subnet to network. You have access to that high level abstraction as well. So I know there's this great fear in a lot of network admins' minds that you know, the world is drastically changing on them and they won't be able to keep up. But in fact, you have all of the same tools available to you. In addition, you have other tools that you can now do new and interesting and unique things with.
Could you guys talk a bit about security? The question came up regarding security in a couple of ways. One was segmentation, where the point was made, people are used to the notion of VLANs in various ways and VRFs and I suppose MPLS being used to segment and separate traffic from each other while running over a common infrastructure.
And then related to that topic of security would be, does the fact that this is a software-defined network introduce a larger attack surface as compared to a traditional network? My gosh, it's software-defined. Does that mean there's bigger holes and vulnerabilities where I need to be more concerned about how to protect my network infrastructure?
Maybe roll it back all the way to, you know, big virtual switch and virtual network segments serve the needs to segment and then isolate traffic in data center networks. So you can isolate traffic based on tenancy with big virtual switch. The notion that there is an attack surface, I think, has been thought through in the open flow protocol. And of course, we need to think about building secure systems and especially if we're building systems that are providing security functionality like isolation and segmentation. Those are important things to consider. I think OpenFlow has made sure that control channel uses SSL and has done the job there, but certainly it's something we have to think about. And, you know, I've forgotten the third part of that question.
No, that really covered it. I mean, it was really the question about segmentation, number one, doing it the big switch way versus the traditional, what everybody's comfortable with, VLANs and VRFs, and then...
Yeah.
Than attack surface.
So I want to add to the segmentation question, because we come across this a lot, right? And one of the things we've tried very, very hard to do within our model is build the underlying infrastructure within the controller and the big virtual switch application in such a way that if you want to essentially replicate what you have today with traditional subnets and those subnets mapped to a VLAN and, you know, effectively those mapped back to VRF, you can still do that within the big virtual switch application. So, I mean, that flexibility is there. So if you want to get get started with the concept of network virtualization, but still use the networking model that you know and love today, you can certainly do that. If you wanted to do something different, I won't go as far to say as this is radical, but you could actually create, because of the flexibility that we have, you could create one big subnet for your data center, a /8 as an example, and then use SDN to very granularly segment and isolate, down to pairs of devices if you really wanted to within that infrastructure. And that's really the power of SDN, is that you can now create whatever network service that you want, and you're not bound by the limitations of the traditional network configuration or the traditional network protocols. You can emulate that traditional network configuration and protocols, but you're not bound by those.
Oh, one question had come in late regarding... Actually, I'll make this a multi-pronged question here. There's a question that comes up that's really kind of a basic OpenFlow forwarding question regarding how do you do layer 3 forwarding? Can you route between layer 3 domains? And then related to that is IPv6 support.
We do have the concept of routing between layer 3 domains, although, and again, very much like the VLAN example and the subnet example, you can do what you view as traditional routing, which is to say that you can build routes based on traditional VLANs within the concept of SDN. But you can also do more interesting policy-based routing, whereby you can say, route between virtual network A and virtual network B. Now, the devices that are in virtual network A and virtual network B may be in the same subnet, right? So you're isolating broadcasts in virtual network A, and you have isolated broadcasts in virtual network B, but they're in the same subnet, and you still want them to allow unicast communication. Or they could be in different subnets, or you could even have multiple subnets in a given virtual network segment. And our concept of routing within big virtual switch in particular is much more about the policy that you're trying to enforce, as opposed to route from subnet 10.0.1.0/24 to 10.0.2.0/24, although, again, you can still implement routing in that way. So we've tried very, very hard to make network administrators comfortable in the sense that they have, their old tools available to them, but now you have new and interesting and unique ways to think about the policies that you want to enforce in the infrastructure. There was a second question there about IPv6.
IPv6 support had come up as a question.
Yeah, exactly. So we will we'll certainly be. We don't support IPv6 today, and you know it really comes down to OpenFlow 1.0. As we move to 1.2 and 1.3, which will be in 2013, we will be adding IPv6 support as well. And you know, we have a number of customers that are okay, that are very interested, and we're actively working with those customers already.
I'm seeing a theme here regarding performance. One question come up: does the first packet of every flow get punted to the controller? You know, how many flows can be dealt with? What's the overall throughput? Things along those lines.
As we move from a distributed to a centralized architecture, it's a fair concern, something that you know we've looked at. The controller can support 250,000. New host connections per second. So, I think we can scale out to support the needs of networks today. It does need to process that first packet. So you are going to have to work within the constraints of processing that packet. I think those constraints are very minimal. And you know, once the direction via OpenFlow goes back down to the switch, you don't have that. You don't have other packets coming back up. So there is an initial. You're good to go.
And I think the other point there is a lot of this really comes down to the specific application that you're trying to implement. As an example, BigTap is a very proactive application. It doesn't sit and wait for particular traffic and respond to that. It has well-defined policies, and you're pushing those policies down in a very very proactive manner. Something like Big Virtual Switch is much more reactive in that a VM has moved from rack 1 to rack 50, and we need to know about that move and do something about it. But it also, so I mean, the application and the expectations of that application will determine how much proactive and reactive you'll implement. But also it's how those applications are using the flow tables and how they can optimize around the concepts of reactive and proactive, and that. There's no reason that Big Virtual Switch, for example, can't insert proactive flows for default gateway, as an example. So you don't have to take a hit on the first packet if you wanted to enable default gateway as sort of a default route. So it really it is very very specific to the use case, and also in the ways that you're implementing the applications. And this will probably change over time. Just based on what the industry is doing, what customers are doing, what their expectations are. And so while many of the applications may be, for the most part, reactive today, there are a number of applications that are very proactive, and we're going to see a mix of both across the spectrum.
If the controller can handle 250,000 flow setups per second, then it becomes a matter of how quickly can the OpenFlow switches themselves actually punt a new flow out to the controller. It seems like the controller may not be the bottleneck. It may be the switch itself. And as you were saying, it's going to go back quite a bit to your application profile and what kind of data you're pushing around your data center to see whether that becomes a bottleneck or not.
Exactly, and it really comes down to not only the switch itself, but the network architecture. In that, when a new device comes online and starts talking, the destination of that traffic may be spread across dozens or even hundreds of switches, and while an individual switch may only be able to take so many flow mods per second, you're really spreading that load across the dozens of switches that you need to push flow mods down to, and so you don't have this single massive hit on one switch. You have potentially dozens, or just depending on the complexity of what you're trying to do, even hundreds of flow mods, but you're pushing that down to dozens or hundreds of switches. So it's the difference between 300 flow mods a second to one switch when a device comes on, or 300 flow mods spread across a couple dozen switches when a device comes on, and that makes a big difference.
Another important question that cropped up here was regarding the interface. We saw when you were demonstrating the BigTap application, the CLI, and someone said, really, CLI, isn't there a GUI that I can use to manage the network more graphically, more holistically, be able to drill down, more intuitive of an interface rather than CLI?
I think this is representative of where we are in deployments right now. Our initial large deployments have been kind of more of a middleware deployment where the UI has been either the kind of application visibility or the aggregation fabric UI, and just being middleware in these deployments, it's suffice for those. And I think that's something we do need to look at. But you know, as we're providing the controller and the application and middleware for these deployments, I think it's getting the job done.
Yeah, the point being that depending on the deployment scenario, you may not even have to really talk to this controller as a network administrator. You're going to be at a higher level on something else.
It really becomes part of the infrastructure, and to be very frank about this, making it clear that we're part of a larger solution that includes, you know, the stuff that can record on networks or modify packets on networks. These things have UIs, and we want to be part of that larger solution rather than having a UI that someone has to, you know, choose to do it in one or the other.
Yeah. So with the API that's there, you're providing any number of different applications to be able to interface with the controller. And going into the controller directly as a network administrator, analogous to how we manage a network today with the CLI of routers and switches, very common for a network engineer to do that. That kind of goes away if you're really managing a specific app that is programming the controller for you. You're dealing with some other app that, you know, isn't even from Big Switch necessarily.
Ethan, you've hit it on the head here, that the API becomes the interface for the application logic within a, you know, within a partner's interface, and that's the both a just a statement about where we are in supporting this ecosystem and in where the use cases are sending us right now.
And I think you really underscored it too when you said, by the way, the CLI is actually talking, doing API calls underneath the hood. That's what's really happening here.
That's really key here is that I'm a Cisco. I spent 9 years at Cisco. I'm very comfortable on the CLI, but the CLI is, at least in terms of our products, is almost an application in that it's making the same API calls that other applications could be making, either user interfaces or existing tools or something like OpenStack could be doing. So, in fact, we've had a number of customers, you know, on the larger side that are going to do some custom programming say, hey, you know, wouldn't it be interesting if we could implement our own CLI that is specific to us? And that is fully in the realm of this concept of having this controller as a platform.
One thing I'd like to just highlight, and this isn't a question, is that it's the openness of this technology as well, which makes it different from things that have handled in the past. So normally what happens is a vendor thinks up a new idea for a feature, they invent it and patent it, and then they take it to the IETF or the IEEE and then try and get them to ratify it. And they might share the IP or they might share the ideas around themselves. And then eventually you, as a customer, just gets the poop that comes out the end of that process. It's all done for you. You don't get any input to it, and you have to put up with whatever it is. And that's how we ended up with silly protocols like OSPF with areas, for goodness sakes. We should have had ISIS or something else. And this product development that you're seeing here, the OpenFlow, the controller, the standards and everything are still being developed. They're just, you're talking about a technology which is still early, and there's use cases, not corner cases, niche use cases, niche ideas, niche which haven't been developed yet. So you'll need to jump in and participate and research to find out where it's going to join your network. So how do you make your network? How do you make bring, you know, Big Switch and the virtual controller into your, you know, configuring virtual switching has really got some powerful ideas in it. But what about OpenFlow enabled wireless, or, you know, using the big virtual controller to manage a Wi-Fi network and can slice it up into pieces? That's still not here yet. So, you know, you'll have to keep tracking the technology and learning as it goes, or maybe, you know, once a year you come back and reevaluate it. Some of these questions have no answers, and I'm trying to answer them to you, but it's a new technology. It's happening in the open. You can see what's happening. You can see the developments. You can jump in and participate over at the various standards bodies if that's what you want to do.
And, Greg, you know, one important difference with OpenFlow and the ONF is that it is driven by network operators. It's driven by users. So where the standards work is being done here at the Open Networking Foundation, it's not about systems vendors. It's about users of networks getting what they need. And I think that's one reason we see the things developing over time, really driven by customer use cases rather than entrenched interests in system vendors.
Thanks for listening to this Priority Queue episode. Visit packetpushers.net to get a handle on all of the content our community is producing. Follow us on Twitter at packetpushers. Email your questions to packetpushers@gmail.com. And remember that too much networking would never be enough.